Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome to today's program Bill Madden, who's Director of Managed Services at Lean Logistics. And today we're going to talk about driving continuous improvement in transportation management. Now, this is the fourth and concluding episode in a series that we've been doing, really talking about how to build a strong transportation management foundation. And in previous episodes, we've talked about the importance of developing a transportation strategy and how do you go about doing that. In the previous episode, we talked about the role of technology. And today we're going to talk about, you know, continuous improvement, which is, you know, really bringing it all together, because as we all know, transportation is a very dynamic environment. And, you know, the reality that was, you know, 3, 6, 9 months ago is not the current reality today. And you really have to continuously analyze your transportation operations and look for ways to improve it in response to the changing environment. And, you know, Bill, you know, and in his role there at Lean Logistics and the Managed Services Group and working with clients, is kind of has a front row view in terms of, you know, driving continuous improvement. So certainly look forward to his perspective and ideas and experience in this area. I just want to remind those of you that are joining us live today that part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you do have a question for Bill as we're kind of having our conversation here, you can do so via the submit a question button or via the chat feature. And I'll keep an eye on that. And certainly if it's a good and appropriate question and, you know, we've got time, I'll weave it into the conversation. And finally, if you are joining us as a visitor today, you will have to sign in first before you can ask a question. So with that, Phil, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You know, so Bill, before we dive, you know, into this topic, you know, I always, since you're a first time guest, I always like to find out how people even got involved in the supply chain logistics industry. So why don't you, you know, very briefly kind of tell us a little bit about your career path, you know, how and why you got involved in supply chain logistics and what your current role and responsibilities are there at Lean Logistics?
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. So I'm one of the many that probably could say I didn't find supply chain. It found me. So actually, I owned a construction company in a previous life and decided to look for a career change when my wife and I were expecting our first child. I have a father-in-law who's in the industry, and based on my proclivity, I suppose, for problem solving and really continuous improvement, he invited me to check out the industry. Began the career as a dispatcher. Today I serve as the director of Lean Logistics Managed Services, where today I have responsibility for $1.5 billion in annual freight under management and really working with our customers to find better ways to do things across their internal opportunities as well as our internal opportunities to better serve them.
Great. You know, we've I think many, if not most, of the guests that we have in the program kind of fall into supply chain logistics. I think you're the first one, though, that has started out in construction. So I think you get the prize for that statistics there. And certainly problem solving is goes to the core of what supply chain management and logistics and transportation management is all about, because it is, you know, one a very dynamic environment, and exceptions are kind of the name of the game here.
Absolutely.
So let's get into the topic now. I mean, I think everyone would agree that, you know, driving continuous improvement is important. But, you know, I know when I talk to a lot of shippers, you know, everyone's so focused on the day-to-day, right? Getting those shipments out today, meeting those customer service requirements, so on and so forth, that, you know, they're so consumed with those day-to-day activities that it's really hard to kind of make the time, if you will, or find the time for continuous improvement. How can companies overcome this hurdle?
Yeah, that is so true. The list is endless, right, of opportunities. And really the focus is always driving cost and service improvements. That's always done through eliminating waste and really driving efficiencies. And all of us are very familiar, but the one thing within supply chain management that is constant is change. So as you're looking for ways to stay agile and anticipate, you know, where you're going to need to pivot your focus, it really becomes a challenge to understand, where do I spend my discretionary time? And I think it's natural for people to want to spend that time on really the bright and shiny strategic work out there. And again, as you said, there's there's a challenge in finding the time to do that. But at the same time, I think everyone can say that there's a portion of that work on your plate that's really not so exciting, but it's required to run the business and really be a part of that system. You know, if I say things like monthly accrual reporting or auditing freight bills, tracking and tracing of shipments, most people aren't going to get on the edge of their seat. However, you know, I challenge people to consider, are you investing really the same focus and drive on eliminating waste and even those processes? And how does that compare to, you know, where you spend your time in focusing on demand planning to support, you know, sailing schedules or locking in carrier capacity through dedicated solutions? And I've asked people, and oftentimes the response is, you know, we don't. And the reason for that most often, again, is there isn't necessarily a direct connection to reducing cost or really improving their customer service experience. But I think we can all acknowledge that, right, in every business, and a business is a system, there's a fixed capacity for throughput in your current state. So a focus for us often is freeing up that capacity or bandwidth so that we can redeploy that energy back into some of those more strategic, game-changing initiatives.
Yeah, no, I think you bring up some great points there. You know, I particularly like what you talked about, kind of some of the more mundane, probably the best word, but let's just say mundane kind of task or things that are on the table versus kind of the big, shiny, you know, sexy kind of things that, you know, us analysts like to talk about, are those big opportunities that are out there that arguably more strategic, might involve more risk, might involve more time and resources, so on and so forth. So you really do have kind of a spectrum of opportunities out there. You know, it would seem to me that a kind of a key starting point, you know, to making that time or recognizing the importance of continuous improvement really has to be kind of a cultural kind of embedded in the culture of the company, right? I mean, is that what you see, you know, that those companies that are doing it right or making continuous improvement part of the of what they prioritize, something that really comes from both the top down and bottom up?
Absolutely. So really, it's got to be at the foundation of your organizational focuses. And as you said, it's got to be embedded in that culture. And really, that's got to be coming from all directions, but it does start with really leadership's promoting that being part of the system or part of the business, not just okay to be part of the business, but actually an expectation for people to, you know, respectfully, but challenge the way that things are being done today. And that's a focus for us internally, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And really it's about having a pair of glasses with the lens of looking at things and saying there has to be a better way to, and then fill in that blank. And if you can start there and adopt that mindset, really the next piece of that puzzle is coupling that with clear goals and objectives. And that might be for your own organization or your customers. And then having the submission of project ideas as they're coming to surface, tying those back to the goals, right? Again, either for your customers or for your internal purposes. And that gets the ball teed up, but we're not rolling quite yet. And to do that, you need to talk about them, right? So once you have the ideas understood and how they support the goals, getting into a very deliberate cadence of having the conversations. And a methodology I often recommend is on a monthly basis, checking in as a group, and really focusing on, you know, progress relative to the plan. You know, what challenges or obstacles are we facing? It's an opportunity for people to ask for support, and really that's to keep the momentum. But then on the backside of that, also having quarterly touch points where you're really then focused on what are the outcomes, what lessons have been learned, and where bandwidth has been gained, assigning ownership to the next set of project ideas.
Yeah, great points. I mean, I love the I love the phrase, you know, how can we do this better, right? Or fill in that blank, right? Always challenging the status quo, because I think it's so easy for all of us to kind of fall into that complacent mode, right? Particularly when things are working well, and in this kind of dynamic environment, the reality is that you know, yesterday's best practice or leading practice may no longer apply to, you know, today. So kind of continuously to analyze it, I think is important. You know, so we talked about the kind of the challenge of time, right? And making that time I think the next challenge, or the other challenge that I see a lot of companies face, is, okay, yeah, we believe in continuous improvement, but gosh, there's so many opportunities on the table, right? I mean, you and we kind of talked about kind of the range of those more kind of low hanging fruit ones, perhaps, and then others that might be longer term, more strategic, so on in nature. How do you go about, you know, prioritizing, you know, number one, identifying, number two, prioritizing these continuous improvement opportunities? I mean, what are some of the leading practices that you see out there?
You know, as far as, you know, the prioritization of your initiatives, you know, you've got to have a process for sharing those. One of the things that we go through is we use project charters, right? And so those project charters are an attempt to really isolate the scope of what your focus is going to be. Really looking at who the stakeholders are going to be, whether it's within your customers group or internally, because those are the folks that are most likely going to be joining the project team once that's been identified as a go-get. We need to have a clear goal, well understood, but really taking it one step further and putting some effort into forecasting what the expected results are going to be. If you have a clear definition of success, it makes things much easier to measure. But most importantly, prioritize. Where are you going to get your biggest bang for your buck? You may not have, you know, $1 million idea, but you know, 20, $100,000 ideas, that's better anyway. So going through the process of understanding really what's the expected outcome is a must have. And then understanding, you know, what your forecasted or anticipated outcome is going to be opens up a whole opportunity for lessons learned. You know, anytime you're implementing a process, you're always going to measure how has the needle moved compared to what we did previously or historic data. But if you can also measure back to, you know, what did we anticipate, you'll understand why we did better or maybe didn't hit the mark we expected. And there's lessons learned there that can be applied to your next initiative, and really applying those lessons learned, that is continuous improvement nearly by definition.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. And let's give some examples. I mean, you know, obviously you've got a methodology and a process for doing this, you know, with the clients that you work with and as part of the operations there. Can you give us some examples of some of the continuous improvement initiatives your team has worked on and kind of how that those came about and kind of what the benefits or results have been?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, beyond the tactical execution within the day-to-day, that's an expectation from our customers. But really the bigger part of our overall value proposition is engaging in that strategic work, you know, things like network modeling, consolidation through optimization, efficiencies through automation, and that the only way that we get those things done is through a deliberate process of that engagement. Again, that monthly progress update, the quarterly assignment of new opportunities to keep that momentum going. And in one specific case with a customer, we were in that cadence and things were marching along beautifully. We came to a point where in two consecutive months, those monthly touch points were canceled or pushed. And so it takes two dots to draw a line. And before that became a trend, we really wanted to better understand the why. and the impact for that matter. The impact was we were able to clearly identify we were slowing progress in our strategic initiatives by not having those meetings. There were removable roadblocks that were not being addressed. And frankly, that was time we were never going to get back. So that really opened this up to being a priority for us. The why was discovered that there were at the month end, that was a time for accrual reporting, as I mentioned earlier. And really, you know, peeling back the onion, we identified that within the group that's responsible for that function, collectively, they spent roughly 40 man hours each month involved in the accrual report out. And those same resources were actually ones that were also part of our larger strategic projects that we currently had in process. So, you know, we asked a lot of questions and worked on it collectively. And the thing that surfaced right away was the number of data sources that they required to actually produce an accurate output. For example, the integration feed from the TMS into their ERP. On occasion, files would fail out because a PGI maybe hadn't been created against that shipment and would not allow for payments to take place. Those were being captured in one area and a different set of data. It needed to be wove back into the overall accrual. And that's just one example. But through identifying processes, we were able to proactively identify failures before they happened. That allowed us to also condense really the data sources involved. Through that first step, we were able to reduce what was previously a 40 man hour process to a 5 man hour process per month. And that was, you know, some pretty notable improvement, but it didn't stop there. We then had a change of manager actually with that customer account. And it was really interesting to see what occurred there. The team had to do some cross-training. They had to do the knowledge exchange. And part of that was going through the month-end accrual process. And it forced the previous manager to verbally explain that step-by-step process from beginning to end. Both of the previous manager and the new manager in transition, wearing that pair of glasses with, you know, there has to be a better way in front of mind, identified that, you know what, if we made just these small tweaks to this database, you know, reshaping some of the queries, we could drive an extremely high level of automation through this. And the end result actually was they now made that process a 10-minute push-button automated process. That's a 99.6% improvement going back to when it was 40 hours. Again, that doesn't sound like, you know, earth-shattering innovation, but, you know, how would your company, you know, benefit from adding the bandwidth of a very seasoned high performer within your group for one additional week per month back into your project team, and then go back and tackle those shiny strategic initiatives that we're all excited to get across the finish line?
Yep. Yeah, no, that's a great example. You know, monthly accruals. I mean, that's something that I don't think gets the heartbeat racing for many folks. And it's not something that, you know, analysts like me are writing about, right? We're talking about same day delivery and omnichannel and, sure, you know, all this and that. But I think it's a great example of an opportunity, as you said, that, you know, was at the table. It was recognized. The business process was kind of reviewed and looked at. And say, hey, can we do this better, right? And then sure, you saw opportunities as well with how technology can perhaps help, you know, as part of that process to align those significant benefits. So, you know, great case study there.
Yeah, you know, another one, if you don't mind, is reporting, right? So reporting is big for everybody. Visibility is key. And we've spent a lot of time over the last year looking at how reporting is executed, right? It's not uncommon to find that reporting tools are more often than not used as really analogs to a data dump for unfiltered, enormous amounts of data that are then, you know, put into an Excel document and then manually massaged until you get to what it is you're looking for. A great first baby step really is to look to go to more automation, right? So if you can find within your reporting tool that allows you to identify specific features, for example, maybe a directional category, geography, origin destination pairs, or take it a few steps further and look for to include or exclude a specific group of charge codes, while also including maybe a certain combination of those OD pairs from a geography standpoint, as well as layering in that maybe desired equipment type with some consideration to a measurement of lead time. You're really going a long ways to taking a lot of the manual work out of the massaging of data and producing an output that's really more exactly what it is you were looking for in the first place. But then to take it even one step further, a large emphasis we've been working with customers on is exception-based reporting. And that's taking not just that criteria I previously outlined, but requiring that to actually even have the materials generated at all. So for example, if you have a high visibility lane with a benchmark or a budget that you need to keep on an average basis, we've established reports that are only generated and automated to notify you when maybe that threshold has been exceeded, and even produces that output before the transaction has taken place, allowing you time to take action against that opportunity. With one specific shipper, we have over 20 automated reports that are produced either daily, weekly, or monthly. It really just drives to the surface correctable situations prior to them having taken place. And the beauty of it all, from my standpoint, loving efficiency, is the maintenance component, where it really is just minutes per day with no risk of failure. And that kind of visibility just wouldn't be possible without that type of an automated tool.
Yeah, no, I think that, one of the challenges, today, especially when you're hearing terms like, big data and even further down the road when you're thinking about, Internet of Things and just this, filtering through all this noise that you can potentially be deluged and buried under, how do you take that, right, and bring to the surface those things that are truly, those bits of knowledge that are truly important for you to take, action on? I think that is, kind of the key thing that many, shippers are looking for or working toward, and I think that goes back toward, pointing and helping to identify those continuous improvement opportunities that sometimes get lost because, they're just buried in the noise of all the data and all the information, coming through. And the reality is most of that data and information is probably just that noise, right?
Sure.
So let's talk about, the role of people and technology in all of this. I mean, what skills and capabilities are required to really drive continuous improvement?
That's a very exciting question for me. We're just beginning our new fiscal year and really taking that to the next level internally. Just to kind of tee that up, last year we spent a large amount of focus on aligning our group to that mindset of there has to be a better way, but also marrying that to engineered simplicity, because really that's what we're in the business of doing. That's what we do, is leverage people, process, and technology to design solutions that are both easy to use and easily repeated. And so once we had everybody really digest that mindset and fully adopt that, we went through a process of affinity diagramming. And really that was just a collection of ideas from our entire group, where they had a chance to literally fill in the blank to, there has to be a better way to blank. We literally got hundreds and hundreds of responses from our team members. In fact, the average was over 6 responses per person across the entire group. And these are ideas that they already had, right? The spectrum of ideas ranged from, you know, how do we improve our technology to our internal processes? Of course, how do we engage with our customers? And ultimately, you know, new customer solutions. So based on that output, we made a goal that we were going to tackle 4 projects per quarter. And we really had a great outcome. You know, one example, we went through and refined our TMS tune-up process. And really, that's just ensuring that as our technology continues to evolve and our customers' business changes, they're getting the full realization of the functionality that we have available to them. On the other end of the spectrum, so to speak, we had an initiative we coined, Own Your Own Career. And that was really targeted at identifying specific skills that we could work with our team members to develop themselves that really were, again, enriching our customers' experience. But, you know, going back to the technology, you know, my favorite of all the questions that were asked was, as we're going through that process, somebody had submitted the idea, there has to be a better way to do what we're doing. And you know, I had to chew on that for a moment. And what they meant and what they explained was, well, there just has to be a better way to collect ideas relevant to, there has to be a better way to blank. And really, that was a moment of validation for me, right? Cemented for me. We're all singing from the same sheet of music. I love it. Challenge us, right? And what we found was there was just a lot of good reasons that historically good ideas were not making it to the table. And so we explored that further. You know, some of the reasons we learned to appreciate included, you know, sometimes ideas occur at a moment of pause, right? You're on hold, maybe waiting for a webcast to begin. And pondering this idea, then you're connected. And unfortunately, more often than not, those ideas vanish forever. In other cases, you know, if an idea doesn't seem big, game-changing or sexy enough, maybe people were hesitant to share those ideas and put those out there. You know, others were even willing to admit that they felt at risk of exposing that they didn't already know the answer. Which, you know, I can appreciate. I've been there. But the solution really was we leveraged the technology that we already had. We have an intranet site that's full of a lot of tools that our team uses on a regular basis. And that's a screen they already have open on their monitor. So we simply added a portal within that web page so that folks could anonymously add ideas as they occurred to them in real time. We also allowed people to reply. So in the case that there was already an answer that existed, they could get the feedback they needed to do their job more efficiently, nearly in real time. Or if it was, you know, a new unique situation, that was something we were able to log and capture and put into the queue for consideration as we move through the prioritization process. It, from a capability standpoint, there's really 2 key ones that I'd throw out there. And one is strong project management skills, as well as change management. I'd say they're very much related, but still very independent. Because at the end of the day, ideas are just ideas unless you do something with them. So if you're asking for ideas, you need to be sure that you have what it takes to turn those ideas into solutions, or you could actually do more harm than good.
No, great examples there. I love that example of, you know, how can we be doing what we're doing, you know, better with the way to capture ideas and feedback in a more efficient and scalable way. And, you know, it reminds me of, you know, certainly I've done a lot of research and writing around the role of social networking in supply chain and logistics environment. And one of the things that I've written about a lot is the potential role for, just what you just described, right? The ability to share knowledge and information and ideas with one another across the organization to help drive innovation And it sounds like you didn't call it social networking, but it sounds like what you deployed there is really kind of a great example of that, where your team members and anyone in the organization can, submit, their ideas and do so anonymously for some of the reasons that people might be hesitant to submit them. And that's a great way to capture those ideas, prioritize them, people commenting on it, so on and so forth. So now you've given me another example of social networking in action in this type of environment. I just want to remind those of you that are attending live, we're kind of running short on time here. I've got a couple of more questions for Bill, but if you do have a question, now would be the time to submit it. So Bill, in some ways you already touched upon this, but just kind of maybe as a way to start wrapping up here. I mean, so you've got all these ideas, you've got these potential continuous improvement opportunities before you. On the front end, part of the challenge is how do you get buy-in, right? How do you get buy-in, particularly from upper management, to execute a project, right? To dedicate the resources, to get the funding, so on and so forth. So that's kind of the front end challenge. And then the back end is how do you effectively kind of then communicate, measure and communicate the results. So your thoughts, insights, perspective on that.
Sure. So again, as you had stated earlier, and I could not agree more, continuous improvement really does need to be ingrained in the culture of the organization. And once that's well understood and supported by leadership and is promoted as part of that system, so to speak, the buy-in is much easier to gain. When you really take a look at that lens of there has to be a better way, and you couple that with those clear goals and objectives, the way people are submitting project ideas, you're really going to get little resistance in support and buy-in from the management team. And then as you get into the ability to forecast those expected results and really show, for example, by making this investment, here's my ROI. If you've gained confidence over time with having a track record of success, or whether maybe the mark hasn't been hit, can go back and explain and understand the whys, how those lessons have been applied to subsequent projects, you're going to gain confidence within your organization and within your team that you're continuously refining your approach and driving a continuous improvement time and time again. So certainly having a very well-established process around the collection of ideas based on the culture that you've established, clear goals, the project charters, the forum we use, and be able to show a track record of this is what we're aiming at, this is where we hit, and this is what we're going to do different the next time. That's just, I really can't think of anything better to get those across the finish line.
Great. So I guess as a way to wrap up, for listeners that are tuning in, what advice would you give them, for those companies that are looking to enhance their continuous improvement, their approach to continuous improvement, particularly around transportation management? What steps can they, take today to kind of move them along the path to be more successful in this area?
Absolutely. First, out of the gate, you've got to make it a priority. And again, I've said it before, but I'll say it again because I think it's worthy. Innovation is key. Innovation isn't necessarily, it's not a noun, it's a verb. It's something that's got to be done continuously. That's got to be the culture piece. And innovation needs to be recognized as it doesn't have to be new. Innovation is also improving on existing processes today. So making that a priority to accept and expect innovation within your group is key, as well as making sure that you have project management skills within your group, that is a core competency, as well as change management. Again, from a cultural standpoint, the message can't be, it's okay to challenge, it's got to be expected, right? You need to enable people and really promote your team to be disruptors with good intentions. And that's a great place to start. But beyond that, oftentimes I've been guilty of saying, hey, if you find something that's broken, beyond raising your hand, also come to me with a solution. And that's always the preference. But if somebody can at least start with, you know, there has to be a better way to do this. I'm just not sure what it is. Explaining that that's okay. That's a good start, and being open to that coaching. You're going to have a much stronger army behind you on that continuous improvement road. I think you need to reiterate that really no idea is too small. You know, the million dollar idea, those are farther and few between. But like I said, if you can get 20, $100,000 ideas done in the same amount of time, you've doubled the opportunity compared to that $1 million idea. But you have to never forget that ideas are just ideas. I mean, the mission is to motivate people to think differently. So you've got to walk the walk. People have to see traction against the ideas that they're really putting themselves out there to put on the table. And if they don't see that, you really open yourself to being at risk of doing more harm than good. You know, another very key component is understanding what the goals are. And those goals are either for your organization or for your customer. And make sure that the ideas being generated are always being thought of in context to those data points. Another great recommendation is, and it was helpful for us, really help people recognize where some of those areas are, where good ideas are formed. For me, it's over the weekend, right? It's in those moments of pause. It's on a drive, right? And making it easy for people to capture ideas. Give them some training, right? I keep a notepad with me, and I get made fun of occasionally, and I have no problem with that. But you know, as an idea formed, I'm jotting it down to make sure that as soon as I get back to an internet connection, I can click on that portal and submit the idea. You know, training someone is a fantastic opportunity. I think I've heard many people say teaching is one of the greatest forms of learning. And so when you're forced to really verbalize, you know, the step-by-step processes that you go through, and have that, you know, set of eyes on, there has to be a better way. Be open-minded to being challenged. Good things will happen there. And then having a fresh set of eyes, right? And that's not just done through training, but, you know, cross-training, contingency planning, career pathing, right? Shadowing amongst team members. You know, as I bring a new fresh set of eyes to a group maybe I haven't worked with in the past, or just get invited to sit in on a meeting, I'd like to think I'm effective in providing some additional insight that maybe others hadn't considered, and I know that's the same for me. So as my team meets, we're often inviting people that, well, why are you even extending me this invite? It's because we need that fresh set of eyes. So really, to tie it back all together, it's making it easy for ideas to be captured and understand the hows and the whys. We've got to publicize and really celebrate those successes. But equally important, those lessons learned. And ultimately, you have to start with a plan. You have to be able to measure. And it's very natural and instinctive to measure based on what was in place before. When you overlap that with a forecast that I've been talking about and understand, you know, how did I compare to the original target, those lessons are just priceless. And then finally, you know, you have to evaluate for yourself. Do you have the resources, the skills in-house? Is project management, change management a core competency? And evaluate is investing in training, maybe right for your organization. You know, there's always the opportunities to find partners that have that a part of their culture, where they're identifying ideas and have that ability to manage change across the finish line. Through a partner, that's another very viable opportunity for people out there.
Yeah, all great advice, Bill. And that last point was, I was going to ask a quick follow-up question, but you kind of touched upon it, because I think one of the things that I know many shippers are beginning to recognize is that, hey, they may not have all the resources, all the technology, or even the time themselves, because they, like I said, it's a very dynamic environment. They're pulled in so many directions that, you know, it's okay to kind of find those partners out there that can help them, whether it's a, you know, managed services provider, right? 3PL, even working collaboratively with some of the suppliers or other customers where, you know, where some of these processes might, or carriers, where these processes might extend across their four walls, you know, beyond their four walls. I think that the recognition is that there is, you know, opportunities and resources, you know, outside the four walls as well that can, you know, play a part in driving continuous improvement. Bill, we're out of time. So, you know, like I always say at the end of every episode, you know, we always manage to scratch the surface on these topics, but I think we got a good start on the conversation here. Hopefully, you know, the folks listening in either today live or on demand, you know, got some great takeaways to get the conversation started within their own organizations about how to drive, you know, continuous improvement. So again, thank you for making the time to be with us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And thank all of you who joined us live today. We didn't get any questions live, but if you are watching this episode on demand on talkinglogistics.com, you can go ahead and post a question or comment there. And I'm sure Bill will be more than happy to respond via that medium. So with that, again, thank you very much for joining us today and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.